Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Redford Township and earned a bachelor's degree in math from Michigan State University and a master's degree in math from Eastern Michigan University. After teaching high school and college math for 11-plus years, she became a certified financial planner. Today, she's the founder and president of Capelli Financial Services and is a member of the 50 top American women in wealth. Her name, Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff. Great name. And I'm Jack Quasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Quasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff, the founder and president of Capelli Financial Services. Marilyn, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Oh, yes. And I was born in Detroit and lived in Detroit until I was eight. We had a flat in the West Chicago, Grand River area. And we lived upstairs and my cousins lived downstairs. My grandparents were a few blocks away within walking distance. So it was a terrific way to grow up.
Your parents called you Mimi.
They did.
What's the biggest thing you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Oh, my. My mom spoke the truth. I don't think my mom could tell a lie physically. It just wasn't in her character. And she was authentic, and I think that was an important attribute of hers. My dad was curious. I think from him I learned exploration and curiosity about things. He was a photographer in the Naval Air Corps in World War II, and then had a career in the engineering lab at GM Diesel. Even after he retired, he had businesses, and I actually took him his last paycheck from the Planning Commission in Redford Township just before his 87th birthday.
You get a math degree from Michigan State, and you become a teacher. 4.5 years at Livonia Franklin and then Schoolcraft and OCC for 7 years part-time. How was it you became a teacher?
Well, I actually started out thinking that I would work with computers, and then along a couple of years into schooling at Michigan State, I had a professor who also was with the education department and decided to take some education courses. And I enjoyed it. I student taught, and I really I found that incredibly satisfying. And so I ended up going into teaching.
At your inner core, you've been and still are a teacher.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about the vocation of teaching.
Teaching is a real privilege. It is it's an adventure, because it's looking at unleashing creativity and love of learning in folks, from students, the high school students that I taught, to the adults that I work with now. Really looking at helping them have clarity to make good decisions.
After 11-plus years of teaching math, you left teaching. Why?
Well, I left teaching when I had my children and thought at that time I might always go back to teaching. And actually, when I looked at going back a few years later, it was a bad economic situation and teaching jobs were not readily available. So I decided to talk to folks about other opportunities, and I interviewed a couple of women who were stockbrokers. It was very unusual at that time for women to be stockbrokers, and it sounded interesting, so I became a stockbroker with a regional Michigan firm.
How does one go from being a teacher to a stockbroker.
It's a big transition, and I loved the education for becoming a broker. I think I was a bit shocked my first day when I got my desk, and I had a desk and a phone, and the whole purpose of the job was to get on the phone and create business, bring in business. So that was another chance to learn some business lessons and look at conversations dealing with people's finances.
You went from the safety, Marilyn, and security of being a teacher, you know, job for life, paycheck twice a month, you know, here's the courses you're teaching, et cetera, to this commission only, high risk, great reward industry. Talk to us about making that change.
It was certainly a change. And I did not look at teaching as a safety net. I really viewed it as an opportunity, and I didn't approach it that way. But one thing that happened when I was a broker is the firm picked one person from each branch to do the Certified Financial Planner program, which was a fairly new program at that time. And when I was chosen to do that, it was like the tumblers fell into place, and I knew that this was something that I wanted to do as a career. The idea of being able to look at someone's comprehensive situation and look at where they are, what they need, and look at providing solutions was an incredibly exciting opportunity.
In these unprecedented economic times today, a lot of people that thought they had true security with a big company, a union, job in government, etc., are realizing they don't. They're facing having to go take risks, go into a, you know, eat what you hunt, etc. What advice would you give to those people who, in all sincerity, are just afraid to do it?
Well, there's a lot of fear, and I think people are probably unrealistic if they don't have a level of fear today. The world has changed a great deal, and we're all dealing with issues that we really didn't think would occur in our lifetimes. And so there is, I think the first step I found is to look at where you are with someone. There's something that if you get it all out on the table and say, here's the situation, here's what you have, here's what you need, this is where we are, then it can begin to start a discussion that can where you can put one foot in front of the other and make progress.
We're talking to Marilyn Dimitroff. When we come back, we'll ask her about what is true security. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff. And in 1982, she became a certified financial planner, and today she's a wealth manager and member of the 50 top women in wealth. Marilyn, what's true security?
Well, the answer to that is different for every individual. I think that there may be a perception that someone who does what I do has a goal for everyone of just piling up big bank accounts, big investment accounts. But that's not really the case. That's not, at least that's not the way that I approach it now or ever have. I don't think anybody at the end of their life says, if they're on their deathbed, says, oh my gosh, I should have worked harder. I should have had, invested differently. What people think about at that time are relationships and the experiences that they've had in their lifetime. So I think ultimately those are the things that drive finances. Investments are not an end in themselves. They're a means to an end. And that's the way that I look at it. In terms of security, I think all of us have a very strong desire to at least cover our basic needs. We want to make sure that we have shelter, that we have health care, that we have all the things that we need to be reasonably comfortable. In fact, studies show that over a certain level, people don't get happier having more money. There's a level that creates a certain level of security, and I'll just throw a number out. What I think it was something around $75,000 a year in income. Beyond that, having more money isn't what makes people feel happier or more secure. It's really knowing that they're on the right path. It's knowing that they have the freedom to do the things that they truly value in life. In terms of security, I think all of us have an expectation that we have a government that's secure, that we have laws that we understand, that make sense, that we have personal freedoms. All of those kinds of things are also conditions that add to our sense of security.
8 years after you become a certified financial planner, because of a change in your personal life, you sell your house in Chicago, you come back to Clarkston, Michigan, and you go to work for Citizens Bank, and you start private banking at Citizens Bank. What is private banking?
Well, private banking was a new entity in the bank at that time with Citizens, and what it did was pull together the various areas of the bank, the lending, the trust area, the investment area in the lobby, all of those kinds of services that the bank offered in a holistic approach for certain clients.
You become, at that time, their first female senior VP. That seems to be a common theme in your life, breaking through that glass ceiling. What advice do you give to young women today who want to be successful in the business world?
I think it's very important to lay out a plan. I actually, with the bank, in my role with private banking and managing the personal trust area for a period of time, was looking at where to go from here. And so I went to the president of the bank and asked. And I think that's what I would always tell young women, is find out what it takes. Have a conversation. Don't be afraid to raise issues, to have a conversation, and be open to advice, to coaching, to talking with lots of folks to get ideas.
After a few years at Citizens, you start your own firm, Capelli Financial Services. How and why?
Well, I actually proposed the plan for my business to the bank, and had a lot of comments about seeing the benefits of it, but it was something that was very different with the bank culture and the bank organization. So I decided to leave and again go back to having my own business. I'd had my own business prior to joining the bank.
All right, let me throw out some hypothetical questions. Marilyn, I always thought I could retire at 60. I'm 59. I can't retire.
Well, and that's a common thing, Jack. You're certainly not alone. I think back to 1999, which to me was the hardest year I've ever had doing what I do, because everybody at that point, after 18 years of incredible returns in the market, averaging 18-19%, thought that they could retire at 50, 55 at the latest, own two or three houses, travel 6 months of the year, and get 20% return on into the future. And we know that in March of 2000, that whole idea came crashing down with the beginning of a terrible decade for investments. All of us, I think, are going to need more money than what we thought we would need, because we're going to live longer. And we'll live longer because technology and medical advances will keep us alive. we will, I think, need to have more money to access good medical care and resources throughout our lifetimes. So all of us, I think, need to plan on working longer than what we probably thought 20 years ago.
No doubt there's a listener out there tonight who's 55 that says, hey, forget about retiring at 60. I'm 55. I've got a family. We have no savings now that our home is underwater.
Mm-hmm. And some folks will have to plan on working their whole lives as long as they're physically able. Actually, if you look at the statistics, they're miserable. The majority of folks have less than $25,000 saved for retirement, and so they will be forced to survive on Social Security and meager savings. Again, the pensions, the traditional pensions that were so common for our parents' generation, are there for far fewer of us in the boomer generation.
Let's jump down to the 25s and the 30-year-olds. Many of the young people, our young people, are avoiding the stock market. They just don't believe it's going to result in success for them.
Well, and the same thing happened to the Depression generation. There was a whole generation that grew up in the Depression, not even necessarily the adults, but the folks who were kids in the Depression, who were very reticent about trusting the stock market because they had seen the impact of that. And of course, the experience of our 20-somethings is that the market's a mess, that it doesn't generate positive returns, even, you know, much less terrific returns.
A few years ago, it hit 14,000, went down to 7, now back up to the 12,023. Some people say, hey, it's going to go higher. Others say, hey, it's coming down. What do you believe?
I don't know. I never pretend to be able to predict the market. It just isn't possible. And there's no one who can predict it consistently and accurately. If there were, they'd just be sitting in a room sucking all the money out of the world's economies. We always hope that there is. I think our brains are wishing for that, but literally no one can do that. I do think that the experience that we've gone through, and literally no gains in the market in terms of the raw dollars over the last decade, will come to an end. And as long as human beings want to make discoveries, to acquire things, to have a better life for themselves and their kids, that we will at some point have a situation where markets are again higher, probably higher than what any of us even imagine.
We're talking to Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff, the founder and president of Capelli Financial Services. Marilyn, the only constant in life is change. So the market's going to change. The last 10 plus years, people have not made money in the market unless they pick certain stocks. How long will it continue?
Well, if we knew the answer to that, Jack, you and I could not be sitting here. We'd just be out figuring out how to spend our billions of dollars. And no one knows the answer to that, because what we do as human beings is take what's going on and project it out forever. It's part of the way that we're wired, because we're pattern-making machines, and so we take this pattern and lay it out. So in terms of looking ahead at how long this continues, there are patterns that have occurred in the past. If we look at the period from 1929, the market actually didn't reach highs at the similar highs until the early 50s. If we look at the period from from 1966 when the stock market hit, the Dow Jones hit 1,000 for the first time. It actually, in the summer of 1982, was in the 700s. So there were 16 years of very poor returns. But then, of course, when it turned around, made up for that lack of returns. So we don't know. But again, betting on human beings over time solving problems, on human beings moving ahead, making discoveries. And of course, with the enormous interconnection that we have as a globe right now, where things, when there are discoveries, they're communicated instantaneously around the world, which fosters more discovery. The rate of change and the rate of discovery is really increasing exponentially. So I think as much as we're in the moment immersed in negativity and looking at all the scary things out there, we also have to realize that there are futures that are positive as well.
Speaking of future, you hear and you read a lot about inflation, hyperinflation being inevitable. What can the average listener do to survive this?
Well, I think inflation is an issue that we will be dealing with. Over the last decade, inflation was quite subdued because of the economic problems. There just wasn't the demand that fosters inflation. I think that will change as the global economy improves, and it is improving. So something to look at. What happens in inflation? One of the issues that we need to consider is in 1982, interest rates were 15-16%, very high. Now they're at historic lows. We're just off historic lows. And so for all of us grown-ups investing, for our whole investing experience, bonds have been pretty good, because when interest rates fall, the value of existing bonds goes up. So we've come to think bonds are safe and that they will be solid and generate good returns. I think we are looking forward in the opposite situation, where bonds are unlikely to be investments that generate any kind of good return, maybe even not a positive return. And so in looking at what will keep up with inflation, because bonds don't, except for Treasury inflation-protected securities, but the vast majority of bonds do not. They lose purchasing power over time. You need to look at the kinds of things that do, and the kinds of things that do are businesses. Businesses that make more money over time, that can pass along increases in prices and so on, are the kinds of things that over time do keep up with inflation.
What do you say to the listener that says, you know, Marilyn, this is great, but my reality is we can't save anything? I mean, we're just, you know, every other Friday, we're scraping together nickels and dimes to just put a gallon of gas, all right, in the tank right now. I got nothing to save.
Yeah, and that's a tough situation. We all ideally, throughout our adult lifetimes, will spend less than what we're bringing in and will allocate money to savings. And that's the ideal. That doesn't happen in probably more cases than it does. In that situation, adjustments need to be made. You can't spend more than what's coming in indefinitely. It just doesn't work. And ultimately, you have nothing but subsidized income, if that's the case.
I was watching Susie Orman the other night, and she was advising people to, quote unquote, live below their means. What does that mean?
That's exactly what I was addressing. Living below your means says you don't spend every dollar that comes in. When you get a new job, when you get a raise, you continue to spend at a lower level, and you save. You set money aside for the future. Because, again, unless you can work at good pay throughout your life, you are going to have to set aside money. And if you look at your future, who are you going to rely on to take care of you? Are you going to rely on your parents? That's probably not the situation. In fact, a lot of folks my age are helping to subsidize parents' care. Are you going to rely on your kids? I don't think so. Are you going to rely on the government to take care of you? Again, we have some safety nets in there, but even those are coming under question and scrutiny as we look at the deficits that are there. So is your employer going to do it? The old-fashioned pensions are becoming extremely rare. So you're going to have to rely on yourself over your working lifetime to set money aside so that dollars are there to work for you when you can't.
I'm okay. I don't have to rely on somebody else. But my issue is that I've got family members that I've loaned money to, Marilyn, loaned, not paying back. They want more gifts from me. There's a lot of listeners out there in that boat. What do you say to those people?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't believe in making loans to family members. If you want to make a gift, make a gift. But a loan changes so many things. It changes the nature of the relationship, and it puts an issue there that can be really destructive to the kind of loving relationship that we all want to have with our family members. So I don't ever advocate making loans to family members.
Amen. Easier said than done. A lot of parents, a lot of fathers out there talk about that they thought that loving was giving their kids everything that they never had, and they've created kids that are entitled to everything and not enough of a work ethic and no savings concept. What do you say to those moms and dads?
Boy, that's a common problem. It's something that I see and have seen throughout my whole career, is parents bailing out their adult kids, parents providing resources to their kids, even to the detriment of the parents when it increases the chance that they're going to have financial difficulties. And this is for all kinds of things, from helping them buy cars to paying for a health club. And the kids, you are not doing your children any favors by bailing them out. Everybody needs to learn financial responsibility. Everybody needs to experience the consequences of bad financial decisions. They'll never become self-sustaining adults without having the responsibility for the consequences.
We're talking to Marilyn Dimitroff. If you want to learn more about her, www.marilyn, M-A-R-I-L-Y-N, at Capelli, C-A-P-E-L-L-I, F-S, Financial Services, F-S.com. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff, a great name, a great name. Marilyn, anybody that listens to you for a little bit comes away saying, this is one optimistic lady. What do you say to a listener who's been in a rut and says, hey, it's springtime, you know, the grass is growing, flowers are stout, I need a new beginning. What should I do?
Well, I think a good way to start is always to look at where you are and then look at what's possible. Where do I want to go? And in doing, in evaluating where you are, you can carry that out and look at what happens if nothing changes. And does this align with where I want to go? If not, then you need to look at what actions you can take to increase the possibility that you're going to be in a place where you want to be in the future. And in a lot of ways, it's an exploration. It really involves talking to folks. If we're looking at a situation of, let's say you're stuck in your job, and you want to find something else, ask questions, have conversations, talk to people you know and respect about what kinds of things are out there, and carry it on until you are really satisfied that you understand, and begin to understand what you like, what calls to you. It's interesting to me. I don't view what I do as work. I literally do it for fun. I enjoy everything about it. It doesn't ever get boring. The economy changes, the laws change, the resources, the tools that we have change, people situations change, and it's always challenging and it's satisfying, and it's really aligned with my interests. I feel very, very fortunate to have found something that does that. And that's what I hope for everyone, that people stick with it until they find something that they really like, and that then they can have build a career on that will sustain them for their lifetime.
Marilyn Capelli, in your role as financial planner to a lot of clients where they've entrusted their assets to you, what's the most important job for each of your clients?
That's a great question. The most important job is to, I think for them, it is to, again, know what they are about and know what we're working towards. Because again, if you start out and you get on a ship and ask the captain where you're going, and the captain says, "I don't know," it doesn't matter where you end up. You could end up anywhere, and it's all right. So I think knowing what's important and what it's going to take to get there is really the job of clients, and we do hold people to that. We have very in-depth and ongoing discussions, because things change over time, so that we really know what is the definition of success for clients.
If there's a listener tonight that's just getting into the financial planning industry, mm-hmm. as a career, what advice would you give to that person?
Well, I'd say congratulations, because it's a career that will always keep you on your toes. I think, again, if you have integrity, that's the most important thing. And of course, if you don't have it, that's the most important thing. So having integrity, really caring about the folks that you're working with, I think is the most critical part of it.
You've been a teacher. A lot of teachers today and government workers, servants, public servants, are afraid. The fear of the unknown, they hear all of these changes, et cetera, all is doom and gloom. What do you say to those teachers and public servants?
Well, change is always scary, and especially with the conversation that we've had about the changes being negative. We're not talking here about changes that appear to be positive. Again, taking stock of where you are and looking at what the potential changes mean to you, and looking at what actions you can take to have an impact, is a very positive kind of thing, and being proactive about it rather than being victimized by it, I think, is a very important course of action.
What would you say to a person or a couple that's starting their own business today?
Ooh. Well, I think, first of all, again, congratulations. This country has been built on folks who have taken the leap and have an idea, have a concept, have a product, and will have the courage to start their own business. It certainly takes some planning. you need to sit down and work the numbers of it. You need to sit down and develop a plan of action for the first couple of years and really stick to that. That's a very important part of it. You don't do it without planning.
You're very optimistic. At the same time, you've had a lot of setbacks in your life, mm-hmm. failures, etc. And one thing I've learned in doing this show for 6 years is people refer to failing and suffering as joy, a blessing from God. Talk to us about failures and suffering.
Failures and suffering are the opportunities to transform your life. I can't imagine where my life would be, and right now my life is so full of joy, with a wonderful husband and wonderful children and grandchildren and colleagues, clients. I can't imagine where it would have been without the failures. That's really transformational. And the same can be said of success. Success can be limiting. I think that success, if it becomes the central part of our lives, and we have a whole story about how successful we are, that limits things. That success is only important as it leads to, again, more opportunities, more challenges, more ability to have further success. My dad always said, never forget. Whenever any of us were getting too full of ourselves, my dad always said that never forget that the size of your funeral depends on the weather. And I think that's an important idea to keep in mind.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice, Marilyn Capelli Dimitroff, would you give to our young listeners?
Oh, young listeners, I think you have a tremendous opportunity. The fact that you are starting out 11 years into poor financial conditions and poor markets actually will probably turn out to be a positive in your lifetime, because no bad trend lasts forever. No good trend lasts forever. But I think you're starting at an opportune time. And very important to be good stewards of the money that you earn. Set money aside. Build that future for yourselves down the road.
Your mom and dad, Mimi, would say, keep making us proud. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a guest. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.